This is Digital Story Podcast number 765, November 17th, 2020. Today's theme is Canon EOS RP, the affordable full-frame mirrorless. I'm Derek Story. At only $1,300 with the kit 24-105mm zoom lens, the Canon RP packs a lot of full-frame value into a likable compact design. After spending a month with the RP, I'm ready to share both my likes and disappointments with this breakthrough camera. I hope you enjoy the show. So if I put this camera in your hands, this one that I'm holding right now, the RP with the 24-105, and I told you it was full frame, and I told you it was new, and I asked you to guess how much it costs, I'm thinking you would probably say more than $1,299. I know I would, because you get a lot of spec for that relatively humble price tag. Now, I know $1,300 is not chump change for sure, but we're talking about full frame with an image stabilized lens. So if this were a poker game, the ante would be $1,000, right? Just to play. And so if you're coming in at $1,300 and you have a winning hand like this camera, you're probably sitting pretty already. What I'd like to do is start out talking about some of the features because it has some good ones. And then I'll talk about a few of the disappointments because there were compromises that had to be made to keep the price where it was. And really it comes down to a matter, are those compromises something that you can live with, or would you rather spend more and, you know, get a different camera? That's for you to decide. I do want to frame this camera by saying that it's really a triple threat. First of all, it's a good stills camera. The RAW files and the JPEGs are quite good, and I was very pleased with the JPEGs out of this camera. The second thing is, it's a solid movie camera. It really is. And a lot of the features, a lot of the physical features, really lend themselves to this being a good movie camera, the articulated LCD, for example. And then the third thing is that it is compatible with Canon's webcam software for video conferencing. And this software works on both Mac and Windows platforms. And the software has just come into full release. It's out of beta now. And if you look at the specs for the software for both Mac and Windows, it's compatible with a lot of cameras and it's compatible with a lot of different platforms for video conferencing. It looks really good. I've tested it with the RP, and the RP works great with the video conferencing software, the webcam software. So there's that as well. So in terms of a camera for modern times, especially at this price tag, I think it checks a lot of boxes. So let's take a look at some of the features here, some of the highlight features. The first one I want to mention is that it has a nice 26 megapixel full-frame CMOS sensor with a Digic 8 image processor. 26 megapixels for most of us, I think, is a sweet spot. Sure, it's great sometimes having more megapixels, but you know, this resolution is 6240 by 4160. That is a nice frame to work with, right? You have room to crop, you can make big prints if you want, and the file sizes are manageable. So I really like the 26 megapixel choice for this camera. I think it's a good one. And the ISO range, the native ISO range, goes from 100 to 40,000. And to tell you the truth, I didn't really think about ISO when I was shooting with this camera. I just really didn't. I knew it could handle it. Now, when I looked at the pictures in Lightroom afterwards, I go, oh, that was at ISO 8000, or that was at ISO 12000, or, you know, whatever it happened to be. But the images look good, and, you know, I would only look at the ISOs just because I was curious and because I was doing this review, not because of image quality. So one of the first things I'd say is a plus for this camera, that if you do want to shoot high ISO and you don't want to spend a lot of money for a camera that can do that, this is one to consider because it does the higher ISOs quite well. All right, let's take a look at framing the shot and viewing the shots. So you have an integrated 2.36 million dot electronic viewfinder. And then on the back, you have a 1 million dot LCD with that very angle design. And this is the first thing that we start to see that really lends itself toward movie making. Canon does these LCDs, these articulated LCDs, very well. They can't avoid the problem that so many cameras have that are trying to do a lot of things in a small body, in that the microphone jack and the headphone jack, the HDMI jack and the USB jack are all there on the left side. And the screen, the articulated screen, opens up to the left side. So you're okay if you don't articulate the screen, if you don't rotate it. But if you start rotating it at dramatic angles, you are going to run into problems with that headphone jack and that mic jack. To tell you the truth, I don't really know the answer to this question, to this problem, on a camera that's compact like this, because you can't put it on the right side because that's where your hand grips it. Maybe you could move it up a little bit, but the body isn't very tall, so there isn't a lot of room to move it out of the way of the screen there. And clearly you're not going to put it on the bottom. So I think it's just one of those things that we have to live with and figure out how to work around if we want that compact camera body that has headphone and microphone jacks. Alrighty. That's a little bit of a digression away from the screen. Is very nice. The LCD, it's a touch screen, so you have control over shooting, playback, menu navigation with it. And the electronic viewfinder is also quite nice. So they did a good job, even though this is an affordable camera, they did a nice job with both the electronic viewfinder and the touchscreen LCD. Let's talk a little bit more about movie stuff. It does 4K video recording, UHD 4K. So you have 3,840 by 2,160 resolution, up to 23.98 frames per second. So it goes up to 24 frames a second at 120 megabytes per second. So yeah, 24 is where it tops out. This is, we'll just leave it at that. Now you also have full HD, 1080 and 720p, and those can do 60 frames per second for slow motion playback, and that's always nice, but not 120 frames a second, which is what I prefer for slow motion playback for HD. So good, but not fantastic. Just something, just, you know, kind of keep that in mind. 8-bit color depth for your 4K video, and you can output to an external recorder. So all pretty good stuff here. Let's talk a little bit more about the way this camera is designed for movie making. It has onboard stereo microphone, but you can also plug an external mic into it, and it has the 3.5 millimeter mic jack, the one that we want. And it also has a headphone jack, so that's cool. And then you have 5-axis dual sensing image stabilization that can be used for recording video to electronically reduce the appearance of camera shake for sharper smoothing recording. So you do get image stabilization, electronic image stabilization for your video. So you can handhold this guy and shoot pretty high resolution video with it. So that's all pretty nice stuff. Are those the best video specs you've ever heard? No, of course not. Are they good for what most people would do? I think so. I do. I think they are. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the AF, the autofocusing. So it has dual pixel CMOS AF, and I'm just going to read you this because this is kind of fun. It offers smooth and fast focusing performance in a similar manner to how a camcorder acquires focus. This system integrates two separate photodiodes within each pixel to provide a broad and dense network phase detection gathering elements across the majority of the image sensor to reduce focus hunting for faster, more direct control of focus placement. All right, that's a mouthful. I will say, though, that it works well. It does work. The focusing was quite cool. I have the camera right here, and I have it on. And, you know, for all things that I do with it, you know, whether they're stills or whatever, I just feels like it just focuses really fast. Those of us that shot with Canon, we've all had, you know, those lenses that worked really well on the camera. And, you know, just like, it just felt like, I mean, my first experience was with USM lenses, where I just felt like the thing was so smooth and quiet and got the focus so fast. Now, the thing that this camera does, and I haven't been able to figure out exactly why, but my focus point keeps wandering away from the center where I like to have it start at least. And I've looked and looked and looked at the controls, haven't been able to find why that's happening. But I do know the trick where if I press the autofocus button and then I press the trash can button, it comes back to center. But what I'm doing to move it away all the time, I don't know. And this is one of the things that's been driving me crazy. And I've actually tried to solve it, and I haven't. I'm sure someone out there is listening and go, Derek, all you got to do is do this. Yeah, I'm sure you're right about that. But I haven't found this yet. And I just think it's sort of odd that it keeps wandering away from the center on me, and I haven't found a way to keep it from doing that. So that's one nit that I have. I'm working in an early nit right there on that sort of thing. But when I do have the focusing point in the right place and I direct it at what I want to focus on, it does focus quickly and accurately as well. Now, let's talk a little bit, since I already brought up a compromise, or that was more of a nit, because there's probably an answer to that one, and I just haven't figured it out yet. But let's talk about a couple compromises. So that digital 5-axis image stabilization that I talked about, that's for video only. Okay, that's not for still pictures. So if you want image stabilization for still photography, then you have to make sure that you have a stabilized lens. Now, the lens that you can get with it, the kit lens, the 24-105, is stabilized, and it has a stabilizer on-off switch, so you can turn it on and off if you need to. It also has a focus control switch as well, so it has two switches there, and it's a pretty nice-looking lens, I might add. I'm going to talk more about the lens here in a few minutes. But the manual focusing ring on the lens is nice and smooth. You know, the operation of it feels well damped, and it looks good. It's a good looking lens. The thing is, though, you don't have a sensor-based stabilization with this camera. You have to use a lens that has image stabilization. So it's optical only for stills. Now, for video, you do get that digital image stabilization for video, but not for still. So that's something that you just really need to be aware of. Another thing too, and this is especially true if you're used to shooting with Olympus, Fuji, some of those cameras that allow a lot of customization, Pentax. This one isn't a camera really designed for extensive customization. You have one function button on the top near one of the dials, and that's pretty much it. And it's not the most versatile function button in the world. So this is not a camera that you're going to customize the way that you do some other cameras. It's more that you have to learn the Canon system and the Canon way of doing things and then conform to it. Now, that being said, their UI, their menu UI, I think is quite good. And one of the things that I like is where you're going from tab to tab in the menu system, each menu screen is only one screen. In other words, you don't have things down below the bottom of the screen. I like that. I think that's good. I like that kind of discipline, so that if I don't see it right away, then I know to go to the next tab until I find the setting that I want. You know, their UI is good, but it's a UI that, you know, you're going to live and die with, I think, mostly, because for the most part, this is not a camera that you're going to customize a lot. And if you're used to that, you may want some more function buttons. You may want some more choice in that matter. Now, there is one SD card, which I did not expect two SD card slots on that. So it's not going to get a demerit for only a single SD card slot. And this SD card slot is UHS-II as well. So you actually get a brownie point for that. The thing that surprised me, though, is that the SD card slots on the bottom of the camera in the battery compartment, you know, with a Canon camera, I understand that, you know, this is a compact camera. There's not a lot of real estate. Surprised at first that it was down there with the battery. And then when I thought about it, I go, oh, of course, because where else are you going to put it again? Not a lot of real estate here. But you should be aware that, unlike with a lot of Canon cameras that, you know, have the card slot on the side, this one's on the bottom with the battery, the way that a lot of compact cameras do it. There is no pop-up flash here, and this is something that I would really like. I understand that I'm asking for a lot for $12.99, but this camera to me just begs for a pop-up flash, and I'd be willing to have it be a little bit bigger to have it, and especially since we don't have image stabilization. We don't have sensor-based image stabilization. So I feel like you have room for it, or could make room for it, or could make it a little bit bigger and have. But for a camera where I just want to carry this camera and I don't want a lot of accessories, because this is not a flagship camera. This is one that you throw in your bag and you have a full frame with you that doesn't take up a lot of space and has, you know, good image quality and the basic functions that you need. Pop-up flash would be perfect. Canon flashes are not cheap, and so, you know, that's an additional cost. It's another thing to carry with you. So, oh, I would love to have a pop-up flash on this camera, and I'll just leave it at this. Now, I would feel guilty if I dinged this camera for not having a pop-up flash, because, again, it's very compact. On the other hand, that's one of the things that might keep me from buying it, in all honesty, because of the way that I'm going to use the camera. I'm going to use this camera in the way that I talked about the Nikon Z5, where you want something relatively compact and relatively light for those times that you need full frame. You don't want to carry a lot of stuff with you. Now, if I was going to use this for professional work, I wouldn't have this camera. I'd get a higher end Canon or Nikon or Panasonic or Sony. For a bop around camera, pop-up flash would be great. And I'll stop there. I've already gone on too long about it, haven't I? Okay, image quality. I was really pleased with the JPEGs. I thought they looked very good. And you get the optical correction with the JPEGs that at first I didn't even realize was going on until I looked at the RAWs. And especially at 24 millimeters with this 24-105, it has a fair amount of distortion and it has vignetting. But you don't see the vignetting with the JPEGs because you can set the camera to correct that automatically, and it does so quite well. It does crop the frame a little bit to, you know, correct that, so you do lose a little bit, but it does it nicely. Now, when I shoot RAWs with the camera and I look at them in Lightroom, you can see RAW, right? So you can see that's not as vibrant as the JPEG, for example. You can see that isn't optically corrected. Can see the vignetting on the white end. You can see all that kind of stuff. However, in Lightroom, if you have it, if you turn on, you know, the optical correction, which it Lightroom right now has it for this 24-105, then boom, the vignetting goes away. And when you do it in Lightroom as opposed to the JPEG, you don't lose as much of the frame for the correction. In other words, you get a little bit of the crop when the JPEG in camera corrects for it, whereas you retain much more of the image area when you do it in Lightroom. Just something to keep in mind when you're shooting with this camera, especially at the wide end. If you want every little bit at 24 millimeters, then make sure you shoot RAW as well. You can shoot RAW plus JPEG. Make sure you shoot RAW as well and then correct it in Lightroom and post, and you'll get to keep more of your frame and still have the corrections. Now, comparing the JPEGs to the RAWs, I just will say that the JPEGs, to me, looked great. But then after I worked on the RAWs looked a little bit better. Now, you would expect that, of course. But just the fact that the JPEGs out of the camera were very good, very clean, nice-looking frames. You could shoot JPEGs with this camera and I think be quite happy, and then just save the RAWs for the times that you want to recover a little more highlight or shadow, or you want to do optical correction on the computer instead of in camera, you know, those situations. But it's a very good JPEG camera. I like the image quality, and I had no problem with the higher ISOs. You get up around 12,000 or whatever, it does great. It really does. Now let's talk about that lens that comes with it, or you can get with it, the 24-105 f4 to 7.1 image stabilized STM zoom. I'm really of two minds when it comes to this lens. On one hand, it's a great value for a Canon image stabilized zoom. It really is. And optically, I think it's pretty darn good. It looks nice. All the functions operate smoothly. Here's the other side of it for me, though. It's bulky. It's, you know, for this camera, which is such a compact body, this lens is relatively long. And that's even before you start to use the zoom. But just carrying it around, it's relatively long. A little too long for me for a camera this size. Now, that's not a knock on Canon's design. You got to do what you got to do. It just makes me think that if I were going to use this camera, I would probably get the zoom in the kit because it's a good value and it is versatile, 24 to 105. And then I would probably also get, because you're saving money, right? The RF 50mm f1.8, which was just announced recently for $199. That gives you a fast compact lens. Or if you have the budget for it, the RF 35mm f1.8 IS macro STM lens for $499, that would be a really nice companion piece for this 24-105. The other thing about the 24-105 that makes me think that I want to prime with me as well is it is slow when you get past, well, I mean, at 24mm, you have f4. Okay, that's livable, especially with this high ISO going on. But when you start zooming out 70, 85, 105, you find yourself at f7 as your maximum aperture really fast. Even with high ISO, that's f7's a bit doggy for me. Fine for travel, outdoors, vacation, all that stuff. But it makes me want to have either that 50mm f1.8 or that 35mm f1.8 available to me in addition to the 24-105. I wouldn't want just the 24-105 only with this camera. I think there would be too many times I'd be disappointed just having that lens. And to tell you the truth, I would really like that 35 f1.8 IS macro. That seems like the perfect companion. Then you have two lenses, and you're ready to go. Bottom line, the verdict on this, it's a great value at $1,299. Seriously, it's a good camera, good image quality, high ISO, versatile with both movie, even though the movie spec could be better, but still good movie spec. Webcam, it's a good camera. It really is. And you get full frame for affordable. So I think that in that sense, if you buy it for what it is designed for, I can easily recommend it. Just keep in mind that there are those little constraints that you'll discover, like 5 frames per second burst modes and limited customization. But if you can live with those, if you add another lens, which I highly recommend, I think this is a great way to get into that Canon system that's going to continue to add a lot of glass. There's going to be a wide variety of bodies to choose from. And it's a pretty good alternative to the other full framers out there. Google Photos will end its free unlimited storage on June 1st, 2021. And this is an article from The Verge. You can read the entire article on The Verge. I have a link to it in the show notes. Let me just read you a little bit about what they said here. After 5 years of offering unlimited free photo backups at high quality, Google Photos will start charging for storage once more than 15 gigs on the account have been used. The change will happen June 1st, 2021, and it comes with other Google Drive policy changes like counting Google Workspace documents and spreadsheets against the same cap. Google is also introducing a new policy of deleting data from inactive accounts that haven't been logged into for at least 2 years. All photos and documents uploaded before June 1st will not count against the 15 gigabyte cap, so you have plenty of time to decide whether to continue using Google Photos or switching to another cloud storage provider for your images. Only photos uploaded after June 1st will begin counting against the cap. So that's kind of nice, right? Google already counts original quality photo uploads against the storage cap in Google Photos. However, taking away the unlimited backup for high quality photos and video, which are automatically compressed for more efficient storage, also takes away one of the service's biggest selling points. It was the photo service where you just didn't have to worry about how much storage you had. Well, however, Google points out that it offers more free storage than others. You get 15 gigabytes instead of the paltry 5 gigabyte that Apple iCloud gives you. It also claims that 80% of Google Photos users won't hit that 15 gigabyte cap for at least 3 years. So if you're using Google Photos, I'm sure you're already aware of this. And really, it's just a matter of, I mean, they're giving us plenty of time here to think about what we want to do. You got till June 1st to do it. Seven months, really. So just start thinking about, maybe start monitoring, you know, how much you're using right now. If you do need more, how much more would you need? And then, you know, get your plan in place. Don't wait until late spring to start thinking, oh yeah, I better take care of that. Start working on your plan. That could be something nice to do during, if you have some time off during the holidays, just start kind of nosing around, see what you can come up with. Or just keep the plan as it is. As they say, 15 gigabytes, that's not bad. I haven't mentioned our donation kit for a while for carefree shipping of found film cameras. As you well know, I have the film camera shop on Etsy, and that's where I take cameras that I've restored, you know, refurbished, cleaned up, got all running nicely, and then I sell them to photographers who are either getting into analog, maybe they have a class in college or JC, or people who that want to shoot film because it's a nice alternative to digital. I have a lot of artistic types who can produce images on film that they have a hard time or don't want to on digital. So there's a wide variety of folks there that hang out at the film camera shop. The difference between what I do there and other places that you can get used film cameras is that I really work on these cameras. And what allows me to do that and still sell them at a very reasonable price is that some of those cameras are donated from folks like you. And then by me not having to invest in them, then all I have to do is put my labor into them, a few parts sometimes, and then get them out there at an affordable price. So it really works well. It's a win-win situation. If you have any analog gear that you're willing to donate for the film camera shop, all you have to do is go to the Nimble Photographer, thenimblephotographer.com. Click on the contact button and you'll see right there. That's one of the options. Let me know what you have and I'll get back to you. And I also have a link to the contact form right here in the show notes if you just want to go directly there. This is something that just feels good all the way around. I like working on the cameras. I love conversing with you when you send me cameras. And then I love conversing with the folks that are very excited about getting a new film camera that they know is going to work and serve them well. Okay, let's do a little virtual camera club news. One thing I want to mention right off the top is that our ultimate black and white photography workshop that I announced last week, it sold out in 2 days. It was very exciting for me. And, you know, I'm thrilled about this workshop. I'm really thrilled about this workshop. And the fact that many of you were thrilled about it as well just made me feel great. So I did add a second session for that workshop. And its first assignment and check-in will be on December 22nd. And then we'll be doing stuff that will build to the class presentation on Saturday, January 16th. And, you know, this is something that I think is really fun to do this time of year because, you know, you have plenty of time to work on your assignments. You can work them in among other stuff. And a lot of these assignments, if you're doing any sort of family activity, and, you know, family activity this year is going to be different than other years, or should be different, because of the spike in COVID. So we're not going to be having big gatherings this year. They're going to be smaller, usually within our social bubble. A little bit more measured, our approach to the holiday season this year. Working on black and white assignments where you're shooting black and white indoors, where, you know, you're creating something a little different, maybe capturing something a little different. It all just feels right to me. So I'm thrilled about all the things that we're going to be doing with this class, and the timing feels absolutely perfect. Now, for the second session, I still have 2 seats open. It already started filling up as soon as I opened it up. I haven't talked about it anywhere outside of here and Patreon. These workshops aren't going to get the general promotion at all. I can tell that right now, and I'm fine with that. I love having our guys and gals fill them up because we have such great people in our community, and it just makes for such a nice vibe during the workshop. So I'm thrilled about it. If you want to learn more about it, though, the second session, I have a link in the show notes, or you can just go to thenimblephotographer.com and check it out for yourself. We're going to have a great time, and we start in mid-December. Rock and roll. A big thanks to our Inner Circle members. They are the ones that month in and month out, you know, give stability, help support this podcast, help support all the new endeavors that, you know, we've embarked upon this year because of the pandemic and because of just a changing environment in every way you can imagine. Inner Circle members have been the bedrock that have allowed us to adapt and move forward and create not only a podcast every week, but also some of these other programs. So I just want to thank each and every Inner Circle member right now. I want to welcome our new Inner Circle members. And one of the ways I like to acknowledge them, our Patreon members, is by providing ongoing discounts, free things, content that other people have to pay for that they get for free. I like to do that because it's my way of saying thank you. And they get discounts on all the workshops, and they get discounts on other stuff as well. You really come out ahead if you're an active member. If you want to learn more about it, just click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can go over our page, see what's going on. These are a great group of artists, and I think you would be quite happy being a part of that. And I would be quite happy if you were a part of that as well. Thank you, Inner Circle members. And finally, be sure to visit our friends at Red River Paper. Tomorrow is a major printing day for me, for my mom. I'm going to do that project I mentioned last week, and I have some other prints to make too. I love printing days. They're so exciting. You know why they're exciting? Because they're calm. They're fun, and I'm actually producing some great artwork at the same time. I use all Red River Paper. I'm going to be using a semi-gloss for my mom. And then some of the other stuff, I'm going to be using some matte paper for some of the fine art stuff. If you want to learn more about what you can do with your inkjet printer, just click on the Red River Paper tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. And be sure to check out their Facebook page at facebook.com/Red River Paper. Longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. And this is the time of year that you want to start making some prints, because believe me, they come in so handy when it's time to present something that is a personalized gift for someone you care about. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. That Canon RP is a nice camera for the bucks, I'm telling you. I'm working on some more stuff for next week. Make sure you come back and join me. Until then, stay safe, be creative. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.